KVNF 90.9.
Shine, little over, living, living, shine, little over, living, living, lead us less too far. We wander, love, sweet voices calling yonder. Shine.
Good evening, and welcome to As the Worm Turns. This is KVNF's gardening show. My name is Jill, and I have a special guest tonight, Daphne Yannakakis.
Hi.
I love how that rolls off the tongue, Daphne Yannakakis.
There you go.
All right, the ladies are in the house tonight, and Daphne joins us from Zephro's Farm and Garden right outside of Paonia here in the North Fork Valley. Thanks for being here, Daphne.
It's my pleasure. I've got some big shoes to fill. Lance, my man.
Yeah, Lance the man. And I'm going to make a special announcement about Lance. He's actually going to be back next week to talk about seed saving, which is so exciting. But this is a call-in show, and so we invite you to call in with your winter questions, 527-4868 and 1-866-KVNF now. Everybody in the North Fork knows Zephro's Farm and Garden for fantastic food and fabulous flowers. And that is your family business, right, Daphne?
It is.
Yeah. You've got your husband and your kids. And
yeah. And friends, the extended family, the extended North Fork Valley family that continues to help us and love us. And we really appreciate everyone who comes on the farm and participates on our harvest days or
right.
When we have big events. I just feel like we're really supported, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff going out there, big events. You've had weddings, parties, concerts, and of course, bringing kids out and people to learn about the farm, which I think is super cool.
Yeah, we definitely need it. It's always comes at a good time when we get a big group of Waldorf kids from over in the Roaring Fork, and they just, you know, they give us a little spring inspiration.
Absolutely. Kids will do that to you. They kind of reinvigorate you.
Indeed.
So tell me, woman farmer, how did you get into farming?
Well, my first my love affair started while I was in college. I did an internship on a farm up in the North Cascades in the Mattel Valley. And I was really lucky to really study under a farmer who had been farming pretty much since he was 15, homesteading. And
oh, wow.
I had met him on his third farm. And so it was really a really special learning opportunity for me. And he grew flowers. We did a lot of dried flowers at that time. And then strawberries and garlic and beautiful veg. And it was a really beautiful spot. But he was a really special teacher.
So. Yeah. So you... real great hands-on experience right there. Mm-hmm. And having a mentor like that, another thing that can invigorate you.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. No, absolutely. And then I studied plants in college. So that was also another, you know, big inspiration. And I was able to do some fellowships in agriculture throughout college. And then after college, I started getting more interested into plants and nursery work. So I did a bunch of time working in perennial nurseries, and that's kind of started my whole plant journey. So
sure. So you've always been interested in farming, but what made you bite the bullet and actually become a farmer? I mean, that's a big decision, and it's a whole lifestyle.
It is, indeed. I mean, I think it's pretty much, I consider myself a plants woman, and I love plants, and so pretty much farming is a vehicle to follow and love that pursuit. I also love to cook. I love to feed people. I love pretty much everything about what we're doing out on the farm. You know, when we first moved here, we had more grandiose visions of nursery on the farm. We didn't know what the heck we were doing. So, you know,
yeah.
My husband wanted to do things with dairy sheep. And I mean, we thought we could just do it all. And, you know, and we have done it all. And I think we've kind of narrowed it down 11 years later. And we're doing a lot of flowers. We do nursery work still because I'm a plant addict. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, you have good plant energy.
Yeah,
I would say.
Well, they love me. I think they love me. I love them. You know, they can torture you as well. So
sure. So Don was in here a few weeks ago, and we were talking a little bit about the winter and how your winter or your season actually starts pretty much right after the new year. Is that was he fibbing us, or are you already into it?
No, we're into it. We're into it. I'll be honest. You know, I think we're still ordering things, obviously, and I'm still trying to enjoy my cross country skis up TV Hill, and
right.
as much as this, I'm like, why isn't it colder? But yes, definitely the greenhouse is, we are starting seeding this week, really, mm-hmm. of, you know, perennials that I want to get planted this season, and things that will that are easy perennials that don't need too much attention, fall planting and things like that. And then also annuals that will be, we have a lot of high tunnels on the property. And so four high tunnels that are.
What's a high tunnel?
A high tunnel is like a greenhouse basically.
Okay.
But it's no cement in the, you know, where the purlins are in, and basically you can drive your tractor through and you can roll up the sides. It's a much taller structure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it's not really permanent. I mean, we could rip it out. Luckily, we have really heavy clay soils, so it's kind of like concrete anyway. So
yeah,
for the most
right.
part, they haven't gone anywhere, just the plastic.
So that's where you get everything started about this time of year? Or?
No, that's where we're going to plant what I'm starting. So I have a heated propagation house.
Okay.
And that heated propagation house is where we start all of our plants and our little babies. And so from there, then we plant out starting in February into the high tunnels.
Oh, gosh. So that happens pretty darn quick.
It does.
Get those seedlings going
mm-hmm.
and already for the tunnels
mm-hmm.
in February.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We'll start with a lot of – we grow a lot of lilies. And so we plant Asiatic lilies in our high tunnels, and they come as bulbs. So getting them in early, it's not as critical with the temperatures. But things like greens also will transplant in February. And cover with Rime, which is a row cover. And it's an amazing what you can really, how much, you know, they'll grow and how a sweet little microclimate you can create with that row cover.
Right. And so is that like, I'm thinking almost burlappy looking.
Gauze.
Gauze.
Yeah. Think gauze.
Gauzy.
Yeah. Yep. It's great fashion wear. I think we had a sort of a Roman, a Greek goddess, you know, during cherry days one time in one of
right.
our vehicles with that on. It has all purposes, tons
mm-hmm.
out there.
And when you're putting that on the garden, it's making a warm bed or keeping your plant?
It has tons of functions. I mean, mm-hmm. it depends on the weight. There's lots of different weights of row cover. You have really heavy row cover that keeps, it blocks more light though, but it keeps more heat in and better frost protection. But a nice sort of middle ground is what we use, a midweight, so that mm-hmm. you get light transmission, but you also get that nice cushion of warmth for the plants as well. And then some are very light just for insect protection and seed germination.
Okay.
So we go through all different, you know,
weights
throughout the season. Mm-hmm. So that's sometimes out in the field as we push the season late, we'll use two layers of row cover to make sure that, you know, our broccoli doesn't freeze and we can, you know, if it's a late season and we haven't quite gotten it to where we want it to be.
Sure, sure. So a nice little tool there to keep you
yeah.
all kinds of different weather and
absolutely,
season.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And protecting, you know, we have in the valley, a lot of it is also to protect seedlings from wind as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's got a lot. Although it is a bit of a wrestling match with the wind, and Rime can be a bit of a nightmare with rocks and
trying to
lots of
pin that baby
dirt.
Down.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
So getting seedlings, you're ordering seeds right now, probably have a lot of seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
how do you get started then?
Yeah.
Going to the greenhouse, the heated greenhouse,
yeah.
and I bet it's meticulous work.
It is. I think I'd like to call it meditative.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
If you've been doing it as long as we have, you know, I think that's the approach I take now.
Mm-hmm.
Put some good music on and start filling flats with soil. We are certified organic, so we use a certified organic soil. We also use Bart soil from the Peonia Soil Company.
Sure, great stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. so I mean, you just have to choose a good mix. For starting seeds, I like to use a nice light soil just so that the germination's easy. I have all different sizes of trays that I use depending on the seed
mm-hmm.
and depending on what the plant, I know how fast I'm going to transplant it, whether
sure.
I need it, whether they need more time to get bigger before I transplant them, or whether I'm just ready to do a quick turnover And, you know, I don't need them to get into that much. You know, they don't need to be in a large cell, basically. That's what they call them, cells.
Cells, the little block of soil that you're going to stick mm-hmm. that seed in.
And they're different. I mean, definitely some folks do soil block methods. And I've just, you know, I basically go with trays. It's just an easier system. We pump out a lot of plants throughout mm-hmm. the season. And so turnover for me is essential. But I highly recommend, you know, that people find what works best for them.
Right. And you mentioned, and that's interesting because I've learned that with Lance and Lulu, mm-hmm. is that everybody does something a little bit different and it can work for
yeah.
you.
Oh, yeah.
So. You mentioned using light soil. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
You know, just something that's not too dense. Like, I wouldn't suggest that you use your garden soil. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's challenging. I think you want to mix it in with some sand and some peat and some or vermiculite. You know, something that's going to lighten it up. Basically, good drainage is basically.
Drainage.
And not mm-hmm. sort of large particles. So if it has, like, large pieces of bark, sometimes that's going to just inhibit the seedlings. Or, you know, they're little babies.
Right.
Sometimes. Some of them are. I mean, depends on the seed, really. But for me, in the seeds that I'm starting, a lot of the times the seed's very small.
You just want that seed to, like, open up and stretch its arms like a little baby and yawn. That's what I'm imagining.
It is. And when I go in there, I said, they are my little babies. So, you know.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you got the seeds going and then bulbs as well. Mm-hmm. And what are some of your favorite bulbs? You mentioned the Asiatic lilies.
Yeah, we do both Orientals and Asiatic lilies. Ranunculus is great. It's a corm. Anemones are great. Those are all flower bulbs.
Uh-huh.
They're not bulbs, they're corms. There's just different
corms.
Corms. So uh-huh. they look like little octopus or little squid, you know, basically.
Okay. Because
their roots, I mean, the anemones are more like circular, they like little discs.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they're not quite. They're not termed a bulb. It's uh-huh. a different term for them. They're not classified as a bulb. But things like dahlias are tubers. Things like, you know, like the iris are more, would those be a corm or a rhizome? You know.
But we lay people tend to think of those all as bulbs.
Sure.
Right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For the most part.
And are all bulbs perennials?
Just, you know, some aren't hardy, you know,
okay.
So it pretty much follows the same rules as plants. Perennial plants is whether they're hardy or not to a certain temperature, you know, mm-hmm. things like amaryllis and, you know, agapanthus, stuff like that is they're maybe a little more tender. We can grow them. And then there's other bulbs that are super hardy, tulips and daffodils and, you know, and then there's tiny little, you know, like crocus and things like
right.
that, and
ooh,
hyacinth
yeah.
and fritillarias and all sorts of. And those are mostly fall planted bulbs because they mm-hmm. actually need the cold. So, you know, it's such a huge, diverse field. And I'm, you know, always in humble awe of the plant kingdom. So,
yeah, that must be amazing, especially the volume that you do and to be always be going at it and just see these cycles coming up and, your baby's growing up, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, you know, every year's different and being in a business and, you know, changing your, you know, tailoring your business to what's selling. I mean, it's how we make money.
Right, right. You really have to kind of get your system down, so to speak,
yeah.
and it
yeah.
sounds like you do that pretty well.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a Christmas amaryllis question?
You can try. I will claim no expertise in the amaryllis area, but I, you know, we'll try.
I love those things, and my grandma used to send me one of those every Christmas. So now when I get one, it's a real nostalgic thing for me. But what can I do with that after that blooms?
You want it to go dormant. I mean, for the most part. And when it goes dormant, you want it to kind of follow its natural cycle. And then, so once it goes dormant, that's, and then store it, basically.
Store it.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a cold storage? Like, do I want to put that in the freezer? Or I know some people force their bulbs or
yeah.
something by
yeah.
sticking them in the freezer.
I wouldn't put an amaryllis in this freezer. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Maybe just a closet?
Yeah, or like a root cellar type thing, 50, you know, and I'm totally just coming off the hip here.
Sure.
You know, but I don't think they're a very hardy bulb.
Okay, yeah.
I think they're a little more tender.
Yeah, they seem tender. They only want to bloom at Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe in South Africa. I don't know.
Right. Right. So what are some of your favorite flowers, Daphne?
Oh, gosh. This is like the most challenging questions.
Hard question.
I mean,
huh?
I can give you sort of Okay. So I would say dahlias. I'm pretty much dahlia obsessed.
Uh-huh.
We have way too many varieties, and we bought more varieties. But luckily, they're pretty they're a fabulous flower, and you know, people love them, and we're selling them, and so that's one of those trends that we're following. But you know, I definitely, that is just a fabulous genus. And then peonies, I adore my peonies, and they're perennials. I mean, perennials, and I would say peonies and dahlias are probably some of the top ones out there. But lilacs, I mean, in terms of, you know, there's just so many different fabulous flowers and grasses. I adore grasses and succulents. And, you know, I think I enjoy the diversity of each plant. And I don't, you know, favor one or the other. You know, I also love seed pods and, you know, the fall foliage and twigs of, you know, like dogwoods and, you know, curly willows and all sorts of, there's just so much. It's such a diverse sort of love affair, really.
Yeah, you are all farmer lady. I can tell that. No, it's great. It's great when people love what they do. I think that's fantastic. And you have several cycles of flowers that you're going to go through in a year. I mean, this is just the start of one cycle.
Right.
Right.
And they repeat in the way, you know, because we consistently want to have certain flowers that will perform, you know, at different times. And there's, you know, certain classes that are going to do better in this time period versus the summer versus the fall. And perennials. Some perennials will bloom all season. Some are going to give you a push in the spring and early summer. And some, if you're lucky, you can cut them back, feed them, love them, and they'll give you something else in the fall if it's a nice fall.
Yeah.
It just kind of depends on, you know, what the plant is, how popular it is for us to use the colors. Colors and what we do with in terms of flowers is a big deal. And we are driven by that. And our customers also drive what we are choosing as well.
Oh, yeah. You've got some fabulous bouquets. And I know you have a flower CSA that happens in the summer. And they're gorgeous. And part of it is the color and the variety. And how does a CSA work? Because you do that for flowers, but you also do that with your food. Am I correct?
Yes. We've backed off from the CSA with our food. We do more of like an occasional Facebook box, basically, now. And that's more of a fall push. We've focused more now on the farm in spring sales for nursery and cut flowers. And then we do more specialty vegetables at the farmer's market, fava beans, garlic, tomatoes, eggplants. You know, we do a lot of hot crops at the farmer's market and then do a really big, a larger push in the diversity of vegetables in the fall, whereas we don't have the nursery crops. We just do more of the spring organic veg starts and perennial sales. And then we move more in towards the, it's a little complicated, but, you know.
Right. But again, you're kind of going for what people want. I mean, when you're taking that food to market, they're looking for some of that specialized stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many great growers out there, and that's something that we've realized. So it's about carving your niche, you know, and I think that we like to grow weird, diverse, different, you know, vegetables. And, you know, we have our little following and, you know, it allows other great growers out there to be successful in what they're growing as well. I think that's really, you want to see everyone be successful.
Absolutely. And I love that when I go to a farmer's market to see different things that I wouldn't grow. And I'd like to pick those up and, you know, check them out. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. All kinds of different stuff out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about what happens when these kids come to your farm, because I think it's so important that people understand where their food comes from and that food really does come from the earth.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think it's been a really – we've had the Montessori kids come out. Our kids have gone to the Montessori school for years. And my daughter's now in the junior high. But basically, when we have a school group come out, and definitely it's been sponsored, and we've had kids from Garnet Mesa and all around the valley, really, a bunch. I'm going to put props out there to the Camp Foundation.
Sure.
They've done such a wonderful job in supporting the education of kids, getting them out to farms, and that's been so helpful for us, and we really appreciate what they do here in our valley. But basically, when we have a school group out, we'll have different stations. We'll either be planting seedlings, or we'll be digging and dividing. We'll be checking out worms, vermiculture. You know, there's mm-hmm. we'll have little stations. Like when we have a school group come for let's say 3 days. Well, they'll be camping out on the farm, cooking. They'll do chores with us. They're part of the farm. We really bring them into the fold, the rhythm of it. And they have free time, because I think what's lacking so much these days for a lot of kids is free time, playtime, mm-hmm. just being able to run around and explore the farm and mm-hmm. just be there and, you know, hang out and go play ghost in the graveyard in the orchard and, you know, just go hang out by the pond and check out and catch crayfish.
Right.
I just think that we're so locked into our media world, and I'm fully there too. I have my little smartphone trying to learn all mm-hmm. my things, and it's just important for kids and adults, because the parents are there too. And frankly, I think they're enjoying as much that free time as the kids are.
Absolutely. And it's interesting when you remove yourself from that world, what opens up to you,
yeah.
I guess. And that's might be what's happening with those kids. What are you looking for them to take away from their stay?
I think the experience, I mean, so many kids, it's just amazing. You know, just we have goats that we raise for ourselves for milk and cheese. Mm-hmm. And so when we bring them in, you know, the goat milking is a big, big one. Kids love it. And some kids are so shocked, just, oh my gosh, the milk's coming out of there, you know, and it's amazing. You know, I think they're really, and we get them in there milking, and, you know, it's a really hands-on, literally, experience. And I think that's huge, that sort of experience. And it's hard. And I think that's something else that they come away with, especially the kids who are staying and we're planting and transplanting. We have a group that comes consistently. It's a different group every year, but a relationship with that school. And, you
right.
know, they help us plant, and it is hard, hot work out there.
Right.
And I think they get it.
Awesome. Well, that's fabulous. And
yeah.
thank you for doing that for everyone. That's so important. And your kids are growing up now, and I bet they're pretty good workers on the farm, aren't they?
They are. You know, it's a catch-22. You know, I don't want to push them too hard so that they're not going to want it. But we definitely have brought them into the fold for sure. And they're out there helping us plant and in the greenhouse. And definitely in the past couple of years, they've helped us at the farmers markets. And that's been just unbelievable to see how well they do. And it's just part of them. And, you know, I think that connection it's great. And I appreciate it a ton, because they're really some of the best workers we have, you
right.
know. And, you know, they're very joyful, and it makes it pleasurable. And that's, you know, it really brings it's the family experience.
Yeah, that's a great way to bring your family together. And what a great farm you have out there. I mean, you can kind of feel that vibe when you're there, that it's welcoming and it's warm, and you don't feel like a stranger. So I really appreciate that. When do you start thinking about veggies?
Veggies are now. I mean,
now?
As well, it depends. You know, we're very lucky to have so much a high tunnel space and greenhouse space. So for me, the veggies are now. I mean, right now I'm still eating lettuce that I planted in the fall, and kale and choy and, you know, all sorts of delicious goodies. And, you know, that's a testimony to row cover. I mean, these aren't in heated greenhouses, and just how warm, unfortunately, I think except for the, you know, the couple that really hard snap, but I mean, they still are alive and kicking and sweet as can
wow.
be. And
yeah.
know.
So there's a lot to whether you use row cover or cold frames, as Lance and Eric have talked about, you can, or even a winter crop of lettuce, you can extend that season.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think with as warm as it's been, you're probably going to be eating fresh all year round.
This year, for sure.
Yeah.
And in years past. And it just depends on the type of greenhouses you have. There's the technology has just gotten so good, you know, whether you have more insulated walls, you know, definitely TLC, Lynn Gillespie she's really pioneered a lot of really cool, innovative greenhouse winter greens techniques. So,
sure.
You know, there's a lot of really cool work being done out there.
Yeah. And Lynn from The Living Farm, and that has got to be another whole set of thinking to be able to have that fresh food all year round,
right,
to supply your restaurant and,
yep,
keep that going. So I bet there is some innovative stuff. We're going to need to get Lynn. Hello, Lynn. She'll be coming in and talking with us, because this is,
yeah,
this is great.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned you're certified organic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what does that, in general, just what makes that different?
Well, what
certified
makes it different? I mean,
mm-hmm,
there's definitely all different levels of naturally grown, certified naturally grown. There's,
right,
beyond organic, sustainably grown. It's just another certification. This is under the USDA, though, took,
mm-hmm,
it over. And so it's a third-party certifying certification system. So we have someone come in outside of basically a certifying agency come in and basically audits us and follows us,
right,
from our seed to what we're harvesting. And we have to have those records. So it's a great way for us. Yes, it's meticulous, but
mm-hmm,
it's all information that we need to have as good farmers, you know.
Sure.
And it makes us be accountable. And you know, and I think it has, and there's a lot of controversy, which ones do people follow? And it's just,
right,
one that we decided to do because we felt that that's what the most people knew and went with. You know, and I think that it's also, if you're going to do it, then you need to participate in it. And then, you know, it's about being in it and affecting change if you want it to be the way
you
want it to be.
Sure.
So, you know, I think that that's a big deal. So,
yeah. And was your land already great soil, what would be considered organic soil, or did it take you a while to actually get to the point where you could be considered organic?
Well, we were really lucky to buy the farm from a great family who's been here, another really great farmer in the valley, Carol Sikora, the Sikoras. And they are an amazing family farm, amazing kids. And, you know, what we inherited was definitely well-loved.
Mm,
so
nice.
We were very lucky. And it was all certified organic, I do believe. Yes, it was certified organic as well. So it wasn't,
mm-hmm,
hard. We did end up certifying our pastures. And we've now opened up a lot more ground than what was there before in terms of what we farm. But,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
You had a great,
yeah,
base to start,
absolutely,
with.
Absolutely. It,
yeah,
was well loved for sure. There's, I think,
that's
we
awesome,
couldn't have inherited a better place. I bought another, not inherit, bought a place. But, you know.
Inherit from,
exactly,
your heart. Kind of,
exactly,
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for making that a little more eloquent.
Yeah. Now, you've got so much going on. Do you use any kind of planting calendar? Do you go by a planting calendar?
Yeah, I mean, we have a schedule. You know,
mm-hmm,
we've been doing this long enough that we know when we need to be planting certain crops to make sure that we're starting the harvest, give or take a couple weeks, depending on weather. You know, I mean, it's all, you know, that's the thing about farming is you can have it all planned out on a pretty piece of paper, but if you can't get out onto the field because it's too wet and it's cold, then you got to be able to adjust,
mm-hmm,
and it's just the way it goes.
Right.
And sometimes you hit it and sometimes you don't, and that's why we really appreciate that we are a diversified farm, you know.
Sure.
Because, you know, last year we had, you know, it was a hard year for tomatoes, and luckily we had a great year in other crops, you know. And so I think it's a diversity is a blessing for us.
Yeah. I just thinking, maybe that's why gardens are so meditative, is because you need that calmness and patience to weather the variety of things that can happen to you and how your plans can be shot to hell, so to speak, from weather or whatever might happen.
Yes. I mean, I would love to say that I approach it with a really calm, meditative approach, but I generally feel like I'm fighting fires pretty much the whole season. So, you know, that's your completely honest gardener right here.
Don has to put you out in the tunnel, and now you meditate on that.
Yeah, exactly. Put me out to pasture.
Right. I've been using that term a lot, putting out to pasture. I don't know. That one's floating around in the ethers up there or something.
But I will tell you now is my meditative time. I really enjoy taking walks around the farm and visualizing, you know, what I foresee and what I want to see happen. And a lot of that's not happening on paper, but it's happening just stepping and walking and being on your land.
There.
And
right.
that, and I think in the moment, it's hard to find that space. But when it's quiet like this, you're really able to find that.
Yeah, I bet that's really great. When Clearwater was in and we were talking about the same thing, is just go out and sit in your yard, sit in your garden and see how the sun shines and where the trees are and where the wind blows. And you can visualize it in your mind when you're out there and enjoying it.
And there's been some stellar days where that sun is so warm and nice that you can just really get out there, you know, just be outside, outside and enjoy that, you know, it's not all vibrating at a very high frequency, you know, and
right.
And you're able to just...
I find that people in this valley do that well. They use this time of year to really lay back a little bit and get perspective on life, maybe travel. But it's a little bit of a downtime, and I think that's good for everybody, good
oh,
for
yeah.
your soul.
Well needed.
Yeah, well needed, absolutely. Well, absolutely great having you here, Daphne. And I've just got to say it, Yanakakis.
Yanakakis.
Because it does roll off the tongue so nicely. And I'd like to invite you back and bring some of your female farmer friends. There's a lot of females out there that farm, and I'd love to talk to you guys.
Awesome.
So thanks for being on As the Worm Turns, and we will... Again, talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Okay.
You've got a cute fast pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're about to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, low, little low and low.